Well, you've got some fascinating couple hours coming up with our investigative reporter, Cheryl Jones. We are going to discuss this hour, MUFON, UFOs, and disclosure. And then in our final hour of the program, we call it Conversations with Cheryl. We'll take your open line phone calls with her right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Cheryl Jones. Cheryl, of course, former news anchor for CNN. I've known her since 1977. When we tried to get her hired in Detroit, Michigan, when she was a two-year-old meteorologist. Wasn't that it, Cheryl?
Yes, your math is getting better every month, George.
I love it. Well, what do you got in store for us tonight?
Oh, wow. Fasten your seatbelts. My interview's with Jan Harzan. He's the executive director of MUFON, the world's largest UFO file database. And we talk about a lot of things. He shares his views on the surprising changing nature of UFO sighting reports, research, the information, how it's reported to and from the public, including the Navy headlining news of the unidentified flying Tic Tac.
Oh, that was a great story. Great story.
Yes. And, of course, we dig deep into disclosure. But in the first segment, we talk about how the secret UFO program from the Pentagon forever changed mainstream media's reporting of this UFO phenomenon and its effect on the current status and the outlook of the movement, and what MUFON knows now about UFOs and aliens after more than 50 years of collecting data from around the world, including those Navy reports. But we start our conversation first with Jan's personal story about the event that happened when he was just a child that was responsible for his position now at the head of MUFON as executive director, and we go from there. Listen now.
Jan, welcome to Coast.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
How did you get so interested in UFOs?
Well, as a young man, my brother and I saw one of these craft at a close range. It was 30 feet away, hovering 10 feet off the ground, making a humming noise with landing gear on it. And I've been hooked ever since.
So what did that lead to in your life?
Well, for me, it actually inspired me to want to go figure out how these craft work. And so I became an engineering student at UCLA, got my degree, and to work for a large computer manufacturing company, IBM at the time, and was really trying to figure out how these things worked and how they operated. I was disappointed in my college days trying to find physics or the mathematics behind these types of systems that just we weren't at that point yet in our existence. My hope was that as I went to work for a company like IBM that had a $6 billion research budget that maybe they could figure this out. But, you know, 50 years later, here I am, and I still don't have an answer. So that's what got me interested in it. And that's kind of the path that led me down. Along the journey, I discovered an organization called MUFON by happenstance. And I ended up attending some of the local meetings, getting involved in the local chapter here in Orange County, and becoming a field investigator, and just got more and more actively involved. And today I'm the executive director. So it's been quite a journey.
Quite a journey. How long have you been the executive director of MUFON?
Coming up on 7 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What's the most stunning thing you've learned about UFOs and ETs and all things related since being at the center of reports coming in really from all over the world?
Well, for me, I think the most stunning thing is that the number of sighting reports has been very consistent through the years. In other words, we're getting the same number of reports today as we did back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. The main difference is the press has not been reporting them. So back in the 50s and 60s, if a UFO or a flying saucer, as they called it in the day, was reported, it made front page news. Today, it barely even makes the last page of the newspaper, if at all. So there's been a media embargo, if you will, on the whole subject, which seems to be turning around as of 2017. So for me, it's just basically that people just really don't know all the activity that's going on out there. And that's what MUFON does. We try to collect that information and make it available to the public.
It all seems to be about education and information, doesn't it? And not being censored. So we come into a problem in that category, don't we?
Well, we do. And, you know, it's actually more about who we are as human beings and our ability to deny facts in front of us and how we incorporate information. And more importantly, our worldview, our paradigm that we set up. So all of us has our own little worldview, our own paradigm of how things operate. And if anything impinges on that, that does not match our view of the world, we tend to reject it. And we see this in all fields, medical, politics, you name it. If it doesn't match what we believe to be true, it doesn't exist. And I think that's our biggest challenge, frankly, our biggest hurdle in the whole UFO ET field.
Do you think it's beginning to get any better now, Jan, now that the 2017 New York Times article exposed the secret UFO program through the Pentagon, and we have more information in some ways, but do we have less in others? How is that shaking out?
Well, I think the revelations in the December 16th, 2017 front page article of the New York Times about the Pentagon's secret UFO program was a watershed moment in the whole UFO field. Number one, here you had the Pentagon actually saying, yes, these things were important enough that we spent $22 million studying this phenomenon. Now, they quickly detracted that by saying, but we stopped funding in 2012, which we now know is not true. And then more importantly, you had the head of that program, Luis Elizondo, stepping out of government because of his frustration for not being able to get this information to the people who could actually act on it. And I think those two things, that article and him stepping out and taking a proactive part in trying to bring disclosure about, has totally propelled us forward in this field. Now, we still see some backtracking on the part of the Navy, on the part of the Pentagon with regard to this subject, but most of it has to do with the national security implications of the subject. The fact that we're dealing with beings that have the ability to manipulate space and time. And that is so much more powerful than anything we've ever developed up to this point, such as the atomic bomb or the hydrogen bomb. So I get why they're trying to keep it under wraps, but I do believe it's time, and with what's happened, that we're going to be much better positioned to move forward. I'm seeing the press being more engaged in this, wanting to know more about it. I'm seeing people who before thought this was all a bunch of poppycock who are now asking important questions. But I'm still seeing about half of the planet, when I do surveys, about half of the people on this planet who don't think we've ever had intelligent life visit us from somewhere else. And that's a huge hurdle to get over for all of us. But I do believe we're on the journey right now. There's no stopping the train. It's left the station, and disclosure is imminent if it hasn't already happened.
A lot has happened and is happening, as we know. It's been over 70 years since Roswell and MUFON recently celebrated 50 years in existence. And despite the government cover-ups for decades, we know a lot more now. MUFON has accumulated a lot of files. What does MUFON know now after gathering data all these years about our status? Where are we? Where are we going? And how is MUFON changing with these times?
Well, what we know for certain, and that we've known this for 70 years, is that we are not alone in the universe, and we never have been. The data we collect in our database is showing that the universe is, in fact, teeming with life. And that life may be from many different places. It could be extraterrestrial, coming from other planets in our known visible universe. Could be from other universes we don't even see. Could be interdimensional beings, beings who operate in a fifth, sixth, seventh dimension. If you read Michio Kaku's book, Hyperspace, the 10-Dimensional Universe, you'll understand that when the universe was formed, it was actually formed in at least 10, if not more, dimensions. But we only live in the three-dimensional world, with the fourth dimension being time. They could be from some other place in space and time. And I think that's becoming more prominent as we learn the physics behind how these craft work. They could be species, an indigenous species on this planet, living under our oceans or under the Earth. I think there's a lot of evidence to point towards that. They could be time travelers. We had a speaker at our last symposium talking about the time traveler possibility, and I think that's a strong one as well. And they could be supernatural, angels, demons, some other kind of supernatural creatures. But the truth is, they could be all of these things simultaneously, because none of them are mutually exclusive. In fact, the only theory that's been put forth that might not be mutually exclusive is the theory that we are basically a computer simulation. That one I don't like very much, but it could be true. Elon Musk loves that. He thinks that's what we're doing. We're all living in a computer simulation. So I think that the good news is we know they're real. We know the devices, the craft have been here for millennia. And now it's really up to us to discover what they're trying to tell us, how these things operate. Can we put any of this technology to use for the betterment of this planet? And I think that's what MUFON has been about, in terms of collecting data, making it available to scientists, and trying to propel this planet forward to a better existence.
And you have an awful lot of incredibly good information on the website for people who are interested in it. And the important thing, too, is the credibility of the evidence, the scientifically based evidence.
Yes, very much so. Now, the big challenge we have is a lot of the evidence gets absconded with and destroyed. So that's always a difficulty. But when you have people, the likes of which, you know, Kevin Day, the radar operator on the USS Princeton, Robert Salas, who was in the missile silo when a UFO shut off his missile systems, you know, people like this, Colonel Holt, who was in charge of Rendlesham Forest when the craft showed up there, Oscar Santa Maria down in Peru, who chased one of these and shot at a UFO in his Air Force jet. These people are so credible that when they tell you these stories, you have to know that this is something that really happened, and then put on your thinking cap and say, how could this be? How could it have happened? Was it anything terrestrial oriented? And I would think 100% of the time you're going to come up with a conclusion it was not. So it's somebody else.
What do you consider the very best evidence and proof for people who want proof that UFOs and ETs and these entities exist?
Well, different people will want different levels of proof. For me, having seen a craft myself is enough proof that these things are real. And I think as more and more people see these craft, come in contact with them, have their own experiences, that for sure is going to make them not a believer, but a knower. For other people, you know, they're going to have to see the crash saucer. They're going to have to see the alien body before they'll ever believe this is true, which is unfortunate because there's so much great evidence out there. Just tens of thousands of reports by very credible people, airline pilots, military pilots, police, law enforcement, physicists, scientists, politicians, different people who have no reason to be making up a story of what they saw or what happened to them. And yet people go back to the belief system. If it doesn't fit within their worldview, they reject the data. And that's our biggest challenge right now. But, you know, great change has always happened on this planet by the next generation, those who don't believe dying off, and the next generation coming along and picking up the mantle. So I think the real future of this is with our young people and getting them engaged and getting them brought up to speed on what exactly is happening here.
Are UFO reports increasing or decreasing? And how does MUFON verify reporting?
We get between 500 to 1,000 reports every month. It's been a kind of a seasonal thing in terms of you get more reports in the summertime, June, July, August. I think basically because it's good weather, people are outside, they're looking at the sky. I think probably over the last 50, 60 years, it's been pretty consistent of what's in the skies and what people are seeing and observing.
Is MUFON seeing any interesting trends, or have you seen over the past few years regarding UFO sightings in the U.S. as compared to around the world?
Well, an interesting trend that's just come to light in the last 2-3 months is the number of Tic Tac reports we're getting. We actually had to add that shape to our intake form for people to report their UFO sightings because we didn't ever have a Tic Tac on there. But now that we've put it there, we're seeing a handful of reports coming through, many of them with great video of these Tic Tacs moving across the sky. We had one just the other day. I believe it was case 106756. I could have the number wrong. Of a private commercial jet pilot flying over Zion National Park in Utah. And there was a Tic Tac following his jet down below. He took out his iPhone and took video of it. And it's been on our website now for some weeks. But that was followed up very quickly by another two witnesses in Missouri who saw an exact same object flying over Missouri and captured on their iPhone. So that's probably the biggest change we've seen. What I would have said before this, if it was a month or two ago, I would have said, well, we're seeing a lot of triangles. We're seeing a lot of orbs. Those have been kind of the mainstay. And then you see all these strange looking craft. I would also say that right now we're having a rash of sightings of the planet Venus because it is very prominent, very bright. And we're also getting a lot of reports on the Starlink, which is SpaceX's satellite system to create a space-based internet system. These satellites follow in a straight line, so they look like a string of pearls going across the sky. Those are not UFOs. I mean, they are UFOs because people don't know what they are, but they're actually IFOs. They're identified flying objects. In the case of Venus, it's a natural phenomenon, a planet. In the case of Starlink, it's a man-made IFO, which is SpaceX's space launch of satellites into space.
Well, he knows his subject matter, doesn't he, Cheryl?
Boy, he sure does. You could talk to Jan about this forever. But we have to cut it off at some point. But he really does dig down. And in the next segment, we're going to talk more about disclosure. And I think you'll be quite surprised at some of the viewpoints that he injects, which makes a lot of sense that maybe we haven't thought a whole lot about before. So we'll do that and then talk about what MUFON is doing for their upcoming outreach symposium.
Tom and I met you again several years ago at a Stephen Bassett exhibit in Washington, D.C. And
yes.
Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the late astronaut, was there and everything. What, Cheryl, got you interested in UFOs?
I've always been interested, even though I was in mainstream news, I've always had a curiosity beyond the headlines because so many things seem unfulfilled and not complete in the reporting. And so many stories would go unnoticed and passed over. And the UFO phenomenon was one of them. Whether it was real or not, or you believed it or not, the fact is it was there. And it was an undercurrent, so to speak. And I did become interested in that long ago. And a sidebar to that is at one point I was pretty active in hot air ballooning and had my own balloon and designed my own balloon.
Really?
Yes. And one of the designs I potentially came up with was of a spacecraft with beings looking out the windows around the equator of the body of the balloon. And this was long before I started working with the X conferences and hosting those conferences for Steve Bassett up in Washington, D.C. So there were just a lot of oddities and friends who were very involved. And then some time later, I did have a sighting, but it wasn't as dramatic as some of them, just an unexplained change of direction and some lights in the sky, and who knows if that was ours or theirs. But one thing led to another, and here we are today. Kind of followed my pathway of being interested in the curious and unexplained.
When you were an anchor person at CNN, did you cover any UFO stories? Did they even permit that then?
No, not really. Not really. In the newsroom, you know what is going to be acceptable and what isn't. You just know it. You don't have to ask.
You can tell.
You know what the agenda is, and so if that's your job, you do your job, and you do the reporting of the stories that that is within the framework of where you're working.
You've been doing this for us now for several months. You enjoying yourself?
I sure am. Yes, I'm enjoying it. I'm meeting a lot of people, and getting to know some people I knew before a lot better, and it's wonderful. I love being able to talk about these kinds of stories that you really don't hear on mainstream news.
Are you getting good comments from listeners in terms of email information and
yes,
tips and things like that?
Incredible. They're incredible. I just it's unbelievable some of the feedback that I'm getting from them.
Cheryl's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and she spells her name with two L's at the end, CHERYLLJones.com. And, I mean, we've got the best audience in the world, Cheryl.
We sure do, and I might mention, I have an alternate email in case my website crashes like it did the last time, which would be spacenews@yahoo.com.
Spacenews@yahoo.com.
Yes.
How did you get that? That sounds pretty interesting.
I was a visionary early on.
Yep, you grabbed them. You grabbed it. Someone's going to offer you some mucho money one day for it.
I'm all ears.
You never know. And you weathering this storm lately, this coronavirus?
Oh, yes. It's really strange. So much has happened this month, as you know, so many things. This has been a month that maybe we'd like to forget someday, but we're all collectively, and with your prayer segment tomorrow night, perhaps that'll make a very big change as well. But we have to get through this. We're all looking forward to it. And we just have to keep positive.
Wouldn't that be amazing after the prayer session, Cheryl, that all of a sudden the experts start saying, we're seeing a very strange downturn in these cases. Wouldn't that be something?
Right. I'm looking forward to that happening.
All right. We're going to come back with the part two of Cheryl's segment with her interview with the executive director of the Mutual UFO Network. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Cheryl Jones, our investigative reporter, as she is investigating UFOs and the UFO program, of course, that has forever changed mainstream media's reporting of the phenomena. It's kind of interesting, Cheryl, how mainstream has kind of grabbed onto this now.
It sure is. Before, you couldn't drag mainstream media to a UFO conference, and now everybody wants to be there.
Well, they sure do. And part two, of course, is just as exciting as part one. Go ahead.
It is. In part two, George, I continue my conversation with Jan Harzan about disclosure, the actual definition. A lot of people talk about it, but not everybody has the same idea about it. What does it mean? Will we ever have a disclosure president? It turns out it's not all that simple in the end. So Jan goes through a little bit of an education and explanation for us to help us understand it. And for the first time ever, he talks about MUFON's new direction for an outreach program of sorts at the upcoming MUFON International Symposium, where they will bring together UAP military and government witnesses along with the public. And this will be the first time for such an event since the U.S. Navy admitted to trying to engage UFOs through their secret research program. So let's listen in.
Jen, there seems to be so many different definitions of disclosure. Not everyone agrees with what disclosure is. It's so much easier now for people to talk about their personal UFO experiences. It's acceptable for mainstream news to report on UFO news, which wasn't the case before the news release in 2017 in the New York Times regarding the government's secret UFO program. So how do you define disclosure?
Well, I think disclosure has already occurred. I think it's not just an event, it's a process. And we're going to continue to see dribs and drabs come out from NASA, from our government, from different people about disclosure. And it'll be things like finding organisms on Mars, you know, finding fossil evidence of life, perhaps plant life even, or animal life under the oceans on Pluto or Europa. At the same time, you've got people talking about these UFOs in the skies, the fact that they're under intelligent control, but they're not us. That begs the question, if they're not us, then who's flying these things? So I think disclosures happen. I think it's a process now. We're probably going to last, you know, 10 to 20 years, perhaps even. A lot of people look at disclosure as the president of the United States has to step to a podium and make a major announcement. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I just don't see it happening. There's no upside to doing that. The big defining moment was December 16th, 2017, when the New York Times broke that front page article. I've seen huge changes happen within our media and within just the general public in terms of coming to grips with this topic. And I think we're well on our way to having continued disclosure and education on this topic be made to the public.
So as you said, it's a paradigm change. The public, the press has changed, though still not perfect like you might want. There's some stigma still around, but this is all happening under President Trump. Is President Trump the disclosure president?
Well, I don't see any one person doing that. I just don't see the president of the United States stepping forward. You know, it'd be great if President Trump would come forward and make some announcements about this topic. I think by taking steps to Space Force and other things, I think he could be the disclosure president. I think they're going to kind of keep it out of the political realm, and they're going to do it more through the back channels of disclosures from NASA and others, credible witnesses and organizations to get people to kind of finally understand that we're not alone. And I think the vast majority of people believe that. I think probably 100% of the folks out there believe there is life other places in the universe based on what we're learning about exoplanets. But only about half of them believe that life's ever come here. And that's the big thing we need to change.
But this all is happening under President Trump, and he didn't try to stop it. So that would mean something.
I think that what people would want to see is President of the United States step forward and make a comment on this topic, a more forceful comment. And you would have to do it in a very discreet way so you don't panic the half of the public that doesn't think anything's ever been here. You know, I speak at UFO groups, and, you know, it's like you're talking to the believers. They're on the Kubler-Ross grieving curve. They're at the far right angle. They're under acceptance. You know, they got another half of the public is still behind step one, which is denial, that they don't believe this thing is real. Because by golly, if it was, we would know it. You know, people would tell us this. And there's a whole bunch of steps in between. So we're kind of going through this grieving process as we transition this disclosure out to the public that we're not alone in the universe. There is other intelligent life here visiting us with advanced technology.
It's probably a good thing that we are taking it in steps, as you say.
Right.
Let's talk about the conference coming up. Every year, MUFON has had cutting-edge themes and top scientists and researchers for the International Symposium with lots of recognizable names over the years long past. And among them, I found, guess who? J. Allen Hynek. It was interesting that in 1976, he spoke on swamp gas plus 10. That was his topic. In 82, his title was Preparing for the Next UFO Flap. Does MUFON have records of Hynek's old presentations?
Yeah, in fact, every year when we do the symposium, we do a proceedings document, which has the talk by the individuals. It's a physical document. You can also get it in soft copy through our store. And we do keep records of those presentations. You know, Hynek used to be a regular at all of the MUFON symposiums back in the 70s and even probably into the early 80s. So he was a common fixture. And I'm pleased to say that his son, Paul Hynek, is actually going to head up an advisory council for MUFON. We'll be announcing very soon. So the family legacy lives on. We're very privileged to have had him as part of this whole subject.
Absolutely. So you're sharing MUFON files with the History Channel for Ancient Aliens and Project Blue Book series.
Yes. We get approached by the media all the time about our records. I mean, frankly, the only place they can find what they believe are credible records is in the MUFON files. So they'll come to us and say, we're doing a show in this geography or on this topic. Is there any cases that you could share? We share those, of course, without witness information in them. But if they would like to speak to the witnesses, we reach out to the witnesses and find out if they would like to go on camera and or make a comment off camera about their case. And educating the public is one of our three major goals. And with television as a medium, film as a medium, these are great ways to get information out to the general public about the subject. And so we do whatever we can to help work with the media to do this.
At the 2017 MUFON International Symposium, you titled that one, The Secret Space Program, a very timely theme indeed. And at that conference, I had the honor and pleasure of being Master of Ceremonies, and the secret space topics created such excitement with record attendance that you could feel it in the air. And 6 months later, that major news story that we've talked about of the Pentagon's secret UFO program was released, December 2017, New York Times, creating that watershed moment and somewhat of a layer of disclosure. Did you see that coming when you planned that 2017 secret space program theme, or was it just the order of the universe that it played out that way?
Well, what I was observing was the fact that there were six books written in the previous year on the whole topic of the secret space program. And there were a lot of speakers stepping out and making some, what some people say are outrageous claims. But also, I knew that there was more going on behind the scenes than we were being let in on. So I thought this would be a perfect topic to put out to the public, have a conversation on the evidence behind a possibility of a secret space program. You know, perhaps some of these UFOs we're seeing are not extraterrestrial or interdimensional. They are, in fact, our own technology in our skies. So we created this conversation, and we invited the scientists to it. We invited the UFO researchers to it. We invited the wild, far-reaching people who are making wild claims to it. And we said, let's make everybody together and let's have a conversation. And it was one of the most successful events ever run by MUFON. People were excited. I talked to people who've never been to a MUFON conference who came up to me and said, thank you so much for doing this. We never thought MUFON would ever sponsor an event like this. But it was done to basically promote the conversation of where are we at and what are the possibilities for our own technology being some of the sightings that we see. And it was, quite frankly, wildly successful.
It was wildly successful. You really pushed the envelope on that one. But then you had to really take it all in stride there when that article came out to reveal the Pentagon's secret UFO program, because that seemed to be right on the heels of that.
You know, I don't know if we had anything to do with that article coming out. Well, actually, we did have something to do with it coming out, because a lot of the data they used to actually justify the ATIP program, as I understand it, came from MUFON files. I mean, these are publicly available files. Anyone can go look at our files and see what the topics in there. And speaking with certain individuals who were keen to that program, it's hard to believe. They couldn't find any data in the government, so they had to go to the publicly available data from MUFON. And that's what they used to convince Harry Reid and his cohorts to approve this program. So I'm very proud to say that MUFON was part of disclosure.
MUFON has played a huge, huge, huge role in all of this disclosure of information.
Yes, very much so. And we'll continue to do so. I mean, it's not like we stop here. We continue to gather the data and make it available to the public. We aren't telling people how to think or what to think. We're just saying, here's the data that we're collecting. And you can look for it yourself and look at it yourself. And you can make your own determination what you believe to be true or not true.
So you're bringing it all together and up to date at the 2020 MUFON International Symposium. What's the symposium theme this year?
Our theme this year is UAPs, Military and Government Witnesses Speak Out. And the reason we called it UAPs instead of UFOs is because that's the terminology the military has coined for this. again, I'm thinking about this, the Navy coming out and these pilots coming out and these Army people coming out and signing agreements with TTSA and others. It appears to be a movement afoot to get our military to talk about the subject. So I thought, what better time than now, just like 3 years ago in 2017, what better time than now to invite our military men and women to come to a symposium and hear their cohorts talk about their own engagement of this topic? Because we know that these craft are seen around military installations, nuclear power plants, and places where anti-gravity research is being done. So a lot of these things have a military presence, if you will. And we're actually offering a half-off ticket for Saturday and Sunday for our military men and women, both past and present, to come and attend the symposium and share with us. We're going to set up an interview room if people want to come and share their own stories, where people can come and tell about what happened to them when they were in the military or not. So again, it's a conversation. It's our military and our government folks willing to step out and talk about the subject, coming to a conference where like-minded people can come together and have a conversation. And we're creating the venue to do that and remove the stigma.
I'm not sure how they will transform the name of ufology with using UAPs.
Yeah.
That's a little tough.
Muapan.
Right.
Our new name, right.
Unidentified apologies.
Yes.
What are some of the speakers and subjects?
Well, you know, we're starting off with George Knapp and James Fox. James Fox is about ready to come out with a movie called The Phenomenon, where he has interviewed a number of top government officials and military people on this topic. George Knapp, of course, was the KLAS reporter who broke the Bob Lazar story, and he has had personal interactions with a lot of the folks at ATIP and TTSA, Robert Bigelow and others. He'll be sharing what he knows. We've got Clifford Stone, who was an Army, worked on a crash retrieval team. We've got the guys from the USS Princeton who are part of the ATIP Tic Tac situation, Kevin Day, the radar reporter. And we also have Sean Cahill, who was the petty officer on board that craft. And then finally, we've got a Peruvian Air Force fighter pilot, Oscar Santa Maria, who actually chased and shot at one of these UFOs. He'll be sharing what he knows. So
that is fabulous. You have some special events and panel topics too.
Absolutely. We've got Paul Heineck, who will be chairing our two panels, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. We've got trips to Area 51, and we have field investigator training if you're interested in becoming a MUFON field investigator. So there's lots of stuff going on. I invite everybody to come out and join us. And if you can't be there live, we're going to offer it on a live stream so you can watch the whole thing from the comfort of your own home.
Fabulous. Where can folks find out more about this exciting symposium, Jan?
They should just go to MUFONsymposium.com, or if they'd like, they can go to MUFON.com and click on the symposium banner. Either way, it'll take you to our symposium website, and you'll be able to check out the speakers, the schedule, the special events, and register right there online.
Jan Harzan, always a pleasure. Thank you for being here with us on Coast.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Our buddy George Knapp's going to be out there, huh?
He sure is. He's going to be there with bells on, and supposedly he's going to tell everything he knows. Do you think that's true?
I don't think George holds back.
Yes, he's always, always the best.
One of the good kind.
And also, I might mention, too, those websites, just in case you missed those, MUFON.com or MUFONsymposium.com, where if anyone is interested in finding out the details and a lot more about that, that is July the 17th through the 19th in Las Vegas at the beautiful J.W. Marriott Hotel. So a lot is going on. And, George, I think Jan is on to something there with creating a venue to bring everybody together for a conversation, because you've got the military, and the theme is UAP, military and government witnesses speak out. We've had at conferences in the past, we have had military and government, and of course a lot of the public, but they're going the extra step this time and creating a special venue to bring them together, so that if someone is comfortable enough to relate their experience within this setting, that's the perfect time to do it. And since we have a different atmosphere now, after the New York Times report admitting, releasing the information about the Pentagon's secret UFO program, and now the Navy going public mm-hmm. with their sightings and their reporting, it's a completely different venue. So I think we're in a different time. And as Jan said, the watershed moment has occurred. Let's see where it goes from here.
Absolutely. What other reports are you working on for the future for us, Cheryl?
Well, I have a lot of different things. I can't reveal them just yet because of
not set in stone.
Final conversation, but it's going to involve more UFO work. It's going to involve a lot of mysterious things that hopefully this would be the first time that they'd be reported on the news and or on coast. And I think we'll continue to turn up new and exciting things that that really will interest our coast viewers.
Lots going on this planet these days, aren't there?
It's really strange, isn't it, George? Just think this month. First we had that horrible storm in Tennessee that killed 25 people almost 3 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
or a little over 3 weeks ago, that is. And you think about all of the things that all of us are going through right now with empty shelves at the stores and
social distancing
and everyone needing to cancel things. And Jan wanted to make it a point that he's very confident and very hopeful, as we all are, that by July things are going to be much more back to normal. We're going to hope and pray that that is the case. So you have to think positive and go with that. But things are strange, and as I mentioned, those people in Middle Tennessee who were just hit with that string of tornadoes that have not yet had time to completely recoup from all of that devastation, and now
they've got this to worry about.
This on top of it, can you imagine?
It doesn't stop. Cheryl, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you, conversations with Cheryl, questions. We'll be back.